Hi, it's Martha Stewart. You know, I spend a lot of time thinking about dirt. At 3 a.m., at all hours of the day, really. What people don't know is that not all dirt is the same. You need dirt with the right kind of nutrients. New Miracle-Gro organic raised bed and garden soil is so dense, so full of nutrient-rich, high-quality ingredients. Miracle-Gro is simply the best.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
I can guarantee you, you have asked yourself these two questions. Are we alone in the universe? And where did we come from? This on? Hello? Hello?
We're all science people.
Science? Exactly.
We know it's a good idea because it's lasted.
There's chemistry in here. There's biology in here.
It's in whiskey. It's in ice cream. It's in who you fall in love with.
Rules.
And ethics. And everything else.
We can make the world better for everybody.
Starting now.
Welcome to Science Rules. I'm your host, Bill Nye. This is the show where science rules. Now, it's a call-in show, people. If you want to be on the show, please go to askbillnye.com and type on in. Once again, I am joined by my writer, editor, and very good friend, Corey S. Powell. Greetings, Corey.
Hello again, Bill.
So today, Corey, we are going to talk about where did we all come from? How did we get here? Well, that, my friends, is the essence of the modern discipline we call astrophysics. And with us, we have a world-renowned, brilliant, fabulous astrophysics communicator. She's the Claire Toe Professor of Physics and Astronomy at Barnard College of Columbia University, and of course, so much more. Welcome to Science Rules, Dr. Jana Levin.
Thank you for having me.
So, Jana, you're studying gravitational waves and black holes and the beginning of the universe. You're on a very, very big track. How did you end up where you are?
You know, it's so interesting. In retrospect, I think we have these narratives that we kind of make up. But looking back, I was always interested in this. I remember the first time I ever saw the Milky Way. It was a stunning experience. I'm a city kid. I grew up in Chicago. There's this thing called light pollution. I'd never seen the Milky Way. I didn't know what people were talking about. I loved Carl Sagan. My dad and I went for like a run on the beach. As a little kid, my father would force me to go running. And,
this is on Lake Michigan or something?
No, this was, good point. We went to this small island off of South Carolina, where there were no streetlights. And we were spending a month out there. And we're on the beach, and it's dark, and it's over the ocean. And I see the Milky Way. It is this milky riff of stars cutting across the sky. I've never seen anything like it. And it was one of the most impactful experiences of my childhood. And I remember we would see shooting stars. It just was staggering.
It's hard to believe it's real the first time you see it.
It is very hard to believe it's real. And still, I did not self-identify as a scientist. I thought scientists memorized equations, were incredibly tedious, had no creativity, were not interesting people. And it really wasn't until like halfway through college that I was like, wait, what's physics? What is this?
So we are living at an amazing time. Mm-hmm. First of all, here's Edwin Hubble, 1923,
mm-hmm. 7. Yeah, discovers. 23 is that plate.
Mm-hmm. So,
and then 1929, he figures out the universe is expanding or finds the evidence for it.
Right, from the collection. Takes him a while to collect all that data.
And then convergent with that is people discovering chain reactions in nuclear fission, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then chipping away at that, people develop quantum mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where the very tiniest, tiniest, tiniest things that we can imagine merge with the giganticest, hugest, most enormous whole things that we can imagine.
Yeah.
And so everybody asks these two questions. Where did we come from?
Mm-hmm.
Are we alone in the universe?
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to answer those questions, you have to explore the cosmos. You have to understand mm-hmm. stars.
Yes.
And so now people routinely just walking down the street will use the expressions Big Bang, mm-hmm. black hole. And I'd be surprised to learn if everybody really knows what each of those expressions means.
Sure. Yeah. So I think what's fascinating in what you're posing is, one, that you used the word you or us, right? It is somehow, by studying something so austere, so separate from us, something that has no reciprocal sense of love for us as we have for it, namely the austerity of the universe and the Big Bang and black holes.
You don't know that, man.
Man.
Like, I feel a cosmic energy when I'm, like, with Corey.
The black hole that is Corey.
So I love that idea that we find meaning in these things. And I get asked that all the time. Why should I care about this
stuff? Oh, my goodness. So why should we care?
We should care for all the reasons you just said. There are actually answers to those questions. Where are we in the cosmic scheme of things? Where did we come from? How do we interpret ourselves in the universe? The answers come from studying those things. The fact that it's these little tiny creatures have been around for a bleep of a second on this little rock, which we now know is one of such a large number, you know, the trillions of trillions, is able to reflect and understand that we are, in fact, progeny of a universe that began 13.8 billion years ago. Isn't that an extraordinary thing?
It's
meaningful.
It is filled
with
reverence.
And that it's true for all of us. I love this. It's true for all of us. This is not social. It's not political. It is not economic. It is just what we are made of in the world.
You threw out the number 13.8 billion.
Mm-hmm.
How do we, I mean, I have a sense, but how do we find that number and agree upon it?
So we predict how hot the light left over from the Big Bang was initially.
How do we predict that?
Well, so that's based on the laws of physics.
Oh, well, there. that's it for today.
It's related to how Hans Bethe figured out how stars shine.
Well, I know it's, yeah, I hope it's related, for crying out loud. This is a podcast about... But do we add up all the matter in the universe and see how fast it's moving and how bright it is?
We can also, yes, we can also, it's a separate way to measure the age of the universe, which is lovely that they come to the same agreement. The separate way to measure it is to look at Hubble and Hubble's conclusion that not only is the universe full of other galaxies, but all of them are moving away from us. If you imagine that the entire universe, what's really happening is that the space between the galaxies are stretching. So the galaxies are stains on space-time and don't actually move.
They're spots.
They're like spots. Like if you were to put stains on a balloon skin, they mm-hmm. don't actually move around. But what stretches is the distance between all of them. And that means cumulatively, the further away you look at a galaxy, the faster it must be moving away from you. And this is called Hubble's law. And from Hubble's law, we're able to deduce how fast the universe is expanding, how fast it's expanding today and in the past. And that allows us to estimate when we all would have been crushed together into an inconceivable singularity.
So in a sense, you just run the story backwards.
You
and
run
see
the
how,
movie backwards, yeah. And then you can tell how long the movie's been running forwards. You can tell how long, if I run it backwards, we were just this catastrophic high-energy singularity, which is what we call the Big Bang.
All right, so here's something astronomers do all the time, which, of course, is charming.
Mm-hmm.
Take these extraordinary, in a sense, mind-blowing, certainly staggering ideas, and just give them these whimsical Big Bang, Big Crunch, Black Hole, Day at the Office. So the Big Bang, the idea is that all the matter and the energy that we can observe was in a single point in space.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what happened in the first 10 to the minus 43rd seconds. Mm-hmm. Right? You can't know that.
Mm-hmm.
The Planck time or something.
We definitely can't know that yet. And I would say, instead of saying everything's at a point in space, I would say space itself had contracted to
yes,
a point.
Yes, yes. Can we go to the phones?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Haley, are you there?
Hi.
Where are you calling from, Haley?
Ohio.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us here on Science Rules. What's on your mind? What can we tell you about the universe today?
How can people accurately measure the universe if the universe is constantly expanding?
Ooh. Do you mean the size of the universe, Haley?
Yeah.
Well, we can't.
Yeah.
We cannot estimate the size of the actual universe. And it's something I have labored over. And in fact, we might never know the size of the universe. What we can know is the size of the observable universe. And we're really careful to distinguish those things. We can tell how far into space we can literally see because of the light travel time since the Big Bang.
So how big is the observable universe?
It's about 92 billion light years across. And that's because even though the universe is only 13.8 billion years old, it's more than 26, because I would get light from both directions. That would give me 26 billion light years. It's bigger than that because the universe is expanding. And so we get to an estimate of about 92 billion light years across is how far into the universe we can see. Now, just beyond that, we presume there's more. Maybe more beyond that. Maybe it's infinite. Maybe it's infinitely full of galaxies.
But the universe is expanding into what? No, it doesn't mean anything. The universe isn't expanding anything. Anything is the universe. Everything that cosmic is universe thing, dark wave, gravity, thing.
Okay. How long has this been upsetting you?
Okay,
Bill, hold on.
So this gets me to the question. Is there more than one universe? How would we know that?
Well, there's two separate things. One is that the universe does not need to be expanding into anything. If I could say the universe is expanding into something and it's expanded by this much space, that would be the universe. What we really mean is space and time. Everything is included. So the universe can weirdly get bigger without expanding into anything. But then there's this other question, this Big Bang we keep talking about 13.8 billion years ago. Who's to say that's the first and only time it's ever happened?
Yeah. Who, Corey?
Who?
What makes you think you were cosmic?
Who died and then left me god of the universe?
Thing stuff. Haley, these questions are so deep.
Yeah.
And, you know, your question is important, and it might not be answerable, Haley. I mean, it might be that the universe is a finite size, which would be spectacularly interesting, but we might never be able to see that deep in space to notice that the universe doesn't have an edge that you would fall off of, but maybe wraps back onto itself, kind of like how the Earth does. You know, if I walk in a straight line from New York City, and I don't turn left, and I don't turn right, and I keep walking straight, I actually will come back to where I started eventually.
If you could navigate the oceans and stuff.
All kinds of...
People have done it in airplanes.
I would just do it. I would swim. I would walk. Now, what if I left the Milky Way in a spacecraft and I looked behind me and I saw the Milky Way receding behind me and I didn't turn left or right and I just kept going straight for as long as possible and I saw this galaxy approach in front of me and I landed on a small planet and I found the Statue of Liberty buried in the sand.
Damn them to hell! Older reference. Planet of the Apes reference where things have gone catastrophically wrong for humankind. Now, Haley, are you buying that we know the universe is constantly expanding? Then are you buying that we know how old, or we have a very good estimate of how old it is?
But how could you know how old it is if you can't? What was the universe before the Big Bang then?
Oh, that's a good question. And this is... Need we say more? Really?
Yes.
I mean, isn't that a good explanation?
This is the deepest fundamentalist question of all fundamental deep questions, Haley.
Mm-hmm. I mean, people have really tried to give really systematic answers to this question. It's not one we can answer yet, but there are some very interesting ideas that there was nothing, literally nothing, but the quantum potential in some sense for something to exist. But I think a much more modern idea is that there is this kind of landscape of space and time. And what we're really talking about is like a ginger root that plumes off, and that our Big Bang is just this sort of plume off of this larger multiverse. And we've skirted the word this long. I can't believe it. Fantastic. Kudos to us. But here it comes. This idea that there is a multiverse and there are these plumes off of which each one having its own Big Bang, and all we can do when we look into the past is see ours. We cannot see deeper past the Big Bang, nor will we ever be able to, because in some sense, because it's space-time, that's so into our past, it is not something we can see.
So that is a troubling, deep question. It could be that the evidence of what happened before the Big Bang is lost to us.
Absolutely.
Expanded beyond our reach.
That's right. It is. It not only expanded beyond our reach, but because different observers in the multiverse perceive space and time differently, for us, it's the past.
But if there are multiple universes, then ours cannot be infinite. by definition. You can't have multiple infinite universes, or
can
you?
Yeah, you can, because, you know.
Ah, my What about when Superman passed through the wall into the other universe? What about when the thing, Spock had a beard? What about that?
You can have multiple infinite universes?
Yeah, because, because when you're visualizing it, as am I, because it's a limitation of the human mind, we're imagining this kind of ginger root of plumes as being nested in a higher dimensional space, and like they'd bump into each other.
Right.
But that's actually just an artifact of the way we're visualizing it. They're not near each other in any higher dimensional space. The space is the multiverse. That's it, baby.
It's staggeringly staggering. It's cool. We all love to talk about it because it's the fundamental, where do we all come from?
Oh, yeah. This is like a real workout for my little primate brain here.
But Haley, you've gotten to a fundamental question of fundamentalism. It's really, really appreciate you taking the time to ask. And the answer is, it really is mind-boggling, and a satisfactory answer is elusive.
Yeah, you took us right to the edge of science, so thank you for that.
Stick around for more science rules after this.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
You're listening to Science Rules.
Let me ask you a question. People say cosmos. People say universe. First of all, is the cosmos and the universe the same thing? And what is it? How do you define what is everything, and is there more than everything?
Yeah, I think the more interesting question is there more than everything? So I would kind of lump cosmos and universe. I would use those interchangeably. Like, if you needed to not repeat yourself so much in a sentence, you could mix it up.
But I'll tell you what, you can tell there's connotations.
Yeah.
If somebody says, well, that's a universal truth.
Right.
That's different
that
if somebody
more
says
global.
Than a cosmic truth.
Right. Well, we used to think that the celestial bodies were the whole thing.
But now
we've learned that our solar system is not the only one. We live in a galaxy where there might be 1/5 of the star systems might have planets and multiple planets. So the number of exoplanets, planets that aren't in our own solar system, might exceed the number of stars in the universe. And so then it gets bigger and bigger. We've got galaxies. Then it turns out, since Hubble, ours is not the only galaxy.
Hubble Space Telescope.
Pre-Hubble Space Telescope.
Oh, Hubble himself.
The actual dude.
After Edwin whom, Hubble. Yeah. Discovered the expanding universe.
Yeah. And he was the first one to identify that a galaxy that looked like just a nebula, it could have been a small thing close by, was actually a huge thing far away. It was actually an entire other galaxy. So he was the first one to unequivocally identify that there were other galaxies.
Victoria, you're out there somewhere, and you have a question. Where are you from, Victoria?
I'm from Calgary, Alberta, Canada.
It's glorious and free. And you have a question.
Yes. So my question is, what do you think of the theory that we're living in a holographic universe? So I want validation of my existential crisis that we're just a 3D image projected on a 2D surface, or we are a 2D surface.
Yeah. I think it's a really clever idea, and it originated with Lenny Susskind, who...
To me, you can't prove a negative. You can't prove that you're not in a video game. There's no way. They implanted all your memories of everything that ever happened and all the discoveries about, like, the cosmos. They're all planted in astronomers' minds by the super game designer. It's just unreasonable to me. Occam's razor.
Well, hold on.
That designer just turned the off switch.
So Jenna, if our universe is a hologram and a sort of in a higher dimensional space, how would we ever know? I mean, is that actually a testable theory?
Well, there's two questions. Why do we even think about that? And the other, is it testable? Both are maybe not impossible. So one of the ways this came up is by thinking about black holes. So We know that...
Which is a star. A black hole is a star.
A black hole is no longer a star. It is a dead star, and it might never have been a star. You can make a black hole maybe in the early universe, and it never was a star.
With oatmeal or something?
Yeah, you could make it with oatmeal if you were strong enough to crush your oatmeal down to a catastrophic microscopic
size. I've had some cold oatmeal on the stove, which it seemed like it was right on the edge.
Yeah,
it was right on the
right
edge.
Right on the edge of black hole. Yeah. So basically, nothing can be more compact than a black hole. So we start to think about matter and density and all this kind of ordinary way of talking about physics, but we should also be talking about it in terms of information. I can't pack more information into a volume than can be packed into a black hole, because that's the fundamental limit that we know of. There's nothing past the black hole. That's when it all collapses. If I took something in this room and I tried to pack more information on it than I could in a black hole, it would become a black hole. And
there
so.
You go. Quote erat demonstrandum.
Yeah. So black holes, therefore, tell us something about information. And fascinatingly, black holes say you cannot pack more information on a black hole than can be encoded on its surface area,
ooh,
not its volume. The black hole cannot, and this can
this
be proven.
This is a Stephen Hawking thing.
It relates to Hawking and Penrose and Bekenstein and Lenny Susskind and many people who came afterwards, that you cannot put more information in a black hole than what can be encoded on the surface, which sounds like a lot less than what you can encode in the volume. And that's where holography comes from. It's the suggestion that the three-dimensionality of the black hole is an illusion created by the information packed on the surface, on the 2D surface. And if that's the limit fundamentally to how much you can pack information in anything in the universe, then we must be, in some sense, 3D projections of information that is at most two-dimensional,
So we might be information dancing on a higher dimensional surface.
Or lower dimensional surface.
Yeah,
that's projecting the illusion of being 3D. So a two-dimensional information encoded totally two-dimensionally that gives us this very convincing and compelling illusion that we're three-dimensional.
Are you okay with that, Victoria?
Clear as mud.
There you go. Well, thank you for calling.
That's
in Alberta.
That's the first step toward enlightenment.
Yeah, thank you.
We have Tanner on the line. Tanner, are you there?
Yes, hello.
Hi, Tanner. First of all, welcome to Science Rules. Where are you calling us from?
Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
Iowa. Do you look at the Milky Way there? Are you in a place where you're dark enough you can really see some real sky?
Down at my hometown, I can. Not too much in Cedar Rapids.
Yeah, I know.
Where's your hometown?
It's called Farmington, Iowa.
There's a lot of towns called Farmington.
And so do you have factories there? Oh, no. Let me guess. There's farms. And so when you were in Farmington, you saw a dramatic night sky.
Yes.
But with that said, that dramatic night sky led you to ask this question. Take it, Tanner.
Okay, I think you guys have talked about it a little bit, but I don't understand how light can be measured from galaxies that are incredibly far away, thus estimating the age of the universe.
Well, light is very persistent, and one of the spectacular facets of light, which led to this entire revolution, all the ideas we're talking about, is the constancy of the speed of light, the fact that light will never slow down. If you threw a rock from a distant galaxy, it would eventually just stop moving and it would never make it to you. The fact that the light does is just this gift, actually, because it tells us not only will it definitely get to us, but it can also allow us to look into the past as well as looking into space. And if we're patient enough, the light will get to us and convey some aspect about that galaxy's. The time when we give up hope is when the power emitted is not strong enough.
Give up hope. So hang on. So you're saying that when you look at a beam of light, a ray of light, you acknowledge that it's coming from the past.
Yeah.
At least as perceived by us. So, so help Tanner understand. How observing one beam of light tells us how old it is.
Right, or that one variable star you were referring
to.
Like, how do you get from that to a measuring the universe?
That's incredibly hard. So if I know nothing about the light source, I really have no gauge to know if that's an incredibly, insanely powerful signal far away that just looks faint because of its great distance, or if it's a fainter less powerful signal right up close. And this is dogs.
A dimmer candle
closer. Yeah, so we have things called gamma ray bursts, which we didn't know. Were they kind of powerful in our galaxy? Or were they insanely powerful and in another galaxy? And still the light was getting to us. So, I mean, Tanner, your question isn't so much maybe about light will always make it to us if we wait long enough and the universe isn't expanding too rapidly, but whether or not it was powerful enough for it to register.
Tanner, did that work for you?
Yeah. Yep.
Really? You're feeling good about it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, it's a hard problem, just so you know. And the standard candles, when they weren't very good, we now use supernovae as standard candles. So if you see entire stars exploding, we are made of the dust of the stars when they mercifully explode and throw it back out into the universe. So it's part of the big ecosystem. When we look for those explosions, those are excellent standard candles as well. And we use those to determine how fast the universe is expanding.
The universe is really good at recycling. It's amazing.
Think about what would happen if it made the stars. The stars had thermonuclear explosions in their cores, making heavier elements like carbon and oxygen and all that stuff we need for life, and then did not cast it back out into the universe, but kept it locked inside. That would be the end of us. There'd be no planets. There'd be no rocky planets. There'd be no life forms.
Science Rules will be right back.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Science Rules is back.
Let us go to the next caller, Sarp. Sarp, are you
hello.
There?
Yes. Hello.
All right, Sarp, welcome to Science Rules.
Whence are you calling?
I'm from Dubai.
Dubai, wow.
See, science is for everybody. Yeah. It's what I love. It's true for all
of
us.
That's fabulous.
I have a sense, Sarp, you have a question that goes along this line. Take it. Take it, Sarp.
Why is dark energy incompatible with string theory? However, dark matter is compatible. It's quite complex, I know.
Okay, well, here, yeah. Maybe
so there's three things, dark matter, dark energy, and string theory.
Right.
Take it, Jim.
Yeah, let's start by breaking down what is dark energy and what is dark matter.
Yeah, so here's the fascinating thing that happened over, and actually many decades of controversy, is that we realize that everything you have ever seen in the universe, everything that anyone has ever seen or ever will see, makes up less than 5%.
What about little birds?
Little birds, entire
puppies?
Galaxies, puppies, dirt, dust, sugar.
Is 5%.
Is less than 5% of what's out there in the universe. And that was a kick in the teeth. That was a shocker. And
teeth,
really,
which are also made of the same stuff.
Stuff that you can see, which is part of the 5%.
So, and we know that because ......
So Saul Perlmutter and that whole Nobel Prize-winning crew and other teams that observed that the universe is expanding faster than we had not only anticipated, but getting faster is the point.
It's accelerating.
It's like a car where you've got, you know, your hand on the accelerator. Oh, foot, rather. I guess you drive with feet. I don't know. I don't drive.
A motorcycle, you twist the throttle.
In New York, we do a
you
lot of driving
some
with
appendage.
Our hands. A lot of driving with their hands.
So that really threw people off, because we know from the relationship of how energy affects space-time that the only form of energy that could cause space-time to expand at an accelerated rate, getting faster and faster, must be diffusely permeating all of space-time and have this kind of weird rubber band quality. As the universe expands, it feels more of it. So that makes it go faster, which makes it feel even more of it, which makes it go faster.
Okay, just a second. Maybe I've got this. And then maybe Sarp will be all over it. So as you expand, space-time expands.
Yes.
You expand into more dark matter.
It's almost as though the observable region that is responding, is able to respond to the dark matter, has put its arms around more of it. I'm sorry, energy. Put its arms around the dark energy, is able to put its arms around even more of it as it expands. And that's not usually the case.
No, when you think of an expanding balloon, the balloon gets thinner. as you blow it up?
The balloon slows down because it still has the same amount of stuff in it, which is driving the expansion, which is regular stuff bouncing around with pressure and pushing on it. And you don't get more of that stuff as the balloon expands. So it gets weaker, so it slows down. Okay, so that's what we anticipated. It's just made up of light and stuff in it, and the stuff has some kind of, in some sense, gravitational pressure, and that's causing the expansion, but the expansion's slowing down as it gets more and more dilute. Totally anticipated
result.
There
you go. Totally anticipated.
In this case, it's not getting more dilute, and that's really wild.
So now,
so we just give it a name.
SARP,
we call
is
it dark energy.
That name. Okay, now. Mm-hmm. String theory. Help SARP out with the string theory.
Well, so I just have to close it. The other 25% after dark matter makes up, dark energy makes up a lot of it, like over 70, like a quarter of it roughly is in a form of matter that is just invisible. But it acts like ordinary matter, but it's invisible. And it just means it doesn't interact with light. It's actually not that exotic. It's nowhere near as exotic as dark energy.
Oh, no.
No.
Okay. So,
a piece of matter that light doesn't bounce off of?
Well, I can give you an example. Neutrinos.
Well,
neutrinos are a known form of matter.
I've got some neutrinos going through me right here,
you do.
Right now.
Billions
and
of
the
them.
Reason they're going through you is exactly because they're dark. That's the reason they're going through you. They don't interact with your atoms or with light or with anything like that.
So this is another case where astronomers take a regular word and use it to describe some amazing, crazy idea. Dark.
Yeah. Yeah, dark. We could have called it invisible. So, but the, the fact that that makes up most of it is quite fascinating. But yeah, the dark energy is just a proxy name we give to mean, well, we don't know what that stuff is.
All right,
is.
So now what's string theory? You're still with us, Sarp.
Yeah.
So string theory is not on the same footing as dark matter and energy. There are zero observations yet which can confirm that string theory is correct. String theory is an idea, and it's a gorgeous idea.
And what makes it so gorgeous?
Well, one of them is because it's unifying in a very fundamental way. So we love this idea of unification. We love this idea that there's not millions of laws of physics and it's all really complicated. We love this idea there's actually one law of physics. That's what we're hoping for. One fundamental law of physics that everything else looks differentiated but is really just unified back in that. So here's one very quick way of seeing why string theory is unifying. It says that every particle in the universe is not a different particle. They're all actually the same fundamental string, just ringing at different harmonics. And the different harmonics, as they're played on this fundamental string, distinguish an electron from a photon. So although seem like completely disparate phenomena, they're actually unified by being made of the same fundamental string.
And the universe is musical again if this idea is correct.
Yeah.
Who came up with the expression string? And is there a longer than it is wider aspect to the string of the string theory?
Well, so I can't swear who the original person was. I think it might have been somebody like Lenny Susskind. I'm guessing it's Lenny Susskind, but I can't swear to it. So Lenny was just messing around with this idea that when we look at the microscopic quantum level, we don't see a point particle. If we looked close enough at it, we blew it up even more, which we haven't been able to do, we would see this little closed loop of string. And it was important that there were these little closed loops of string.
Loops of string.
Yes, that the strings were closed loops and you couldn't cut them or break them. They were fundamental. They were what they were. But when they played different harmonics, they emulated different particles. So the entire universe is reducible to a string.
So
now
it's
more complicated.
Gluons and
gluon would be a different note played on the string.
Okay, so here I'm going to be here as SARP's SARP's proxy. So SARP, you can jump in if I'm misspeaking for you. Yes,
okay.
We have this sort of exotic theory. It might be a theory of everything. Somehow, dark energy is harder to explain than dark matter. We don't really have even our most exotic theories can't really get us to what dark energy is and what is it that's so mysterious about dark energy that even an exotic forward-looking theory like string theory can't quite explain it.
Well, string theory might be even worse, and I think this is maybe, I don't want to ascribe SARP's motivation, but maybe why he asked the question is because it does look like string theory does not want there to be something called dark energy, which is a little bit stronger, right, than just saying, does it explain dark energy? But it might not be that cut and dry. So, for instance, Brian Greene, who's a famous string theorist, he and I have written papers together where we ask if, even in the context of string theory, if the dark energy could be a kind of quantum energy trapped in extra spatial dimensions.
Whoa.
So it is not firmly incompatible with string theory.
Okay.
Bill's leaving. Bill's
no,
like halfway out the door.
No. I just, you guys... How much do I love you? So it'd just be a quantum energy trap.
Yeah. So we know that you can trap quantum energy between, let's say, two plates in the laboratory, something called a Casimir energy. You can get these two plates and it creates this kind of quantum energy between them. So we wondered, well, if the universe has extra spatial dimensions, do you have a similar kind of energy? Because it's like a small space in which quantum energy gets trapped.
So instead of four dimensions, you keep going.
Right. If the universe was n-dimensional, where only three spatial dimensions and one time dimension expressed or was large. Maybe the universe was born with 10, 11 dimensions and they were all wrapped up small. And what we're really trying to figure out is why did only three of the spatial dimensions get large? Why did the others stay curled up tight?
SARP?
And if they do, they would have this quantum energy and it could be the dark energy.
So SARP, is this helping you?
I have a question.
Yeah, good.
Of course you do. Please.
Is the Higgs field the core of the problems?
The Higgs field is really not the core of the problem. The Higgs field did us proud. The Higgs, just quickly, I think the reason Sarp's asking the question is because the Higgs, every particle has a field. So you described already electromagnetic waves and having a photon.
Love that. Love
That's
those.
Every single particle in the universe has a field component and a particle component. So the Higgs boson, which we call sometimes the God particle, more often the goddamn particle, which was, by the way, the original title Leon Lenerman intended, also has a field component. And that field is what's more interesting to us in the universe that we live, because it permeates all of space and it looks kind of like a dark energy. And it's something that our atoms do interact with. And it's the reason we feel inertia, because as we move through this field, there's like a kind of molasses aspect of the interaction of the atoms in our body with the field.
That my feeling of
it's hard to stand up or push around.
When it's hard to stand up from this, hard to stand up from this chair. Or when I'm taking a tight turn in a car and I'm feeling, kind of pushed to the side.
Yeah.
That's me interacting with the Higgs field.
Yes.
Okay. That's pretty cool.
And that looks like dark energy. But interestingly, it does not satisfy what we see cosmologically. It's not the right energy level. It's not the right. So it can't explain the dark energy as we know it. But probably people have played with other ideas. Well, maybe there's something else like a Higgs field whose field is permeating all of space that has an energy density to it. And that could be the dark energy. So these are ideas that people pursue.
So we see evidence that there's energy out there. We just don't know where it came from and what it's doing.
Yeah, an electric field in this room has energy. We can't see it. Unless it's oscillating, it's hard to see. And so it could be there's a bunch of fields in the universe, each contributing to the dark energy. The problem is if I did a naive estimate of what it should be, it would be way huger. The weird problem is that the dark energy is small, which is surprising. It should be huge.
And so if it were huge, it would have just blown the universe
apart.
It'd
all be over. Right. We never would have had time to make stars and galaxies and
all
stuff
right.
in it.
So
okay. Well, I'm glad it's not huge then.
Yeah.
So along this line, SARP, it is speculated that all of these fields, all of these fields and these strings and these energies and these darks are one thing.
Well, string theory has proliferated. It started as string theory. Now it's kind of M theory, and nobody's ever figured out what the M stands for. I think
multi.
It could be multi. It could be M for membrane. We now think that there's basically every dimension of fundamental object less than the size of the entire space. So in other words, if we live in a three-dimensional universe, maybe there are strings, maybe there are membranes, which are like surfaces. If we live in a four-dimensional universe, maybe there are volume, maybe there's the number of membranes as you go up in dimensions.
Okay, so SARP, I hope this helped a bit, because you got us on a great great deep dive here, and I want to thank you for taking us down that path.
Thank you, SARP.
Oh, I could thank you.
It's time for the lightning round. That thunderclap is an artifact of a lightning strike. So are you ready for the lightning round, Doctor?
I am.
Okay,
I'm in.
Okay.
I'm here.
All right.
Okay, Jana.
Activate your brain.
Yeah.
Best galaxy name out there.
Oh. I mean, I guess it would have to be Andromeda. I mean, it's a good name. What am I supposed to say? M87?
Oh, God, that is cool. That's hot.
M81 is a much better name.
Are there other universes besides ours? I think we covered
that. I strongly suspect that there are, because that's how the whole trend since Copernicus has gone.
Do you think it is possible to travel into the past?
It is definitely possible. In Einstein's theory of general relativity, or the general theory of relativity. I apologize.
It's okay.
I
was wondering.
But a lot of, there are chronology protection conjectures that argue that
protection conjectures
that even though it is permissible under certain extraordinarily strange conditions, very strange conditions in relativity, that maybe the rest of physics will forbid it.
Your favorite space song. You go with Elton John or you go with David Bowie?
Well, it would have to be so far David Bowie. Sorry, Elton. But I would say there's an Arctic Monkey song which makes reference to black holes.
Oh, okay.
I've been noticing, like, your ear picks up, right, every time you hear space-time. I've heard both space-time and black holes in an Arctic Monkey song.
If you could travel anywhere in the universe, where would you want to go?
Oh, man, that's a tough question.
I'll tell you what I told a reporter
once. Yeah, give me some ideas.
Hawaii. Hawaii's pretty good.
You can
breathe. Water's nice. Yeah.
But you've got a space suit. You've got a super space suit.
Yeah.
So you can go somewhere for a day with your oxygen supply.
A day, and I can make it back. Well, here's the problem. I would, of course, who's not going to go check out a black hole? I mean, come on.
Okay.
But then by the time I come back, this millennia have passed here on Earth, and, you know, I don't get to hear this podcast.
Well, God, that would be an impoverished life.
So I don't know.
What is the most common misconception about space in your view?
In your humble opinion.
I think it's the one that was already raised, that space expands into other space. And yet I always want to convince people that means it is space.
So there's no space, that it's a meaningless question, in a sense.
It is, right. Anything that can be expanded into is part of the universe because it is space.
In a related, follow-on, last, lightning round question, what is the one thing everyone to know? One thing everyone to know about space or astronomy or astrophysics.
Wow.
that
I think
is the answer.
That might be the answer.
And here's what I mean, everybody. When you ponder the number of stars in our galaxy, then in turn, the number of galaxies that we can observe. Now it's in around a trillion. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yeah, about a trillion galaxies. Yeah.
That is more than you can imagine. Mm-hmm. And somehow you and I are part of that great cosmic universal scheme of things. And somehow you and I are one way in which the cosmos knows itself. That is really something.
And that we humans with our little puny human brains have figured this stuff out and can talk about it.
It is admirable.
It's really something.
And whenever it makes you feel small, the way to remind yourself, well, isn't it grand that we were able to do that?
Isn't it grand that we feel so small?
Yes. Isn't it grand we have the sense to feel so small?
Thank you so much, Jan Levin, doctor.
Jana,
thank you.
That was beautiful.
Thanks,
thank you.
Corey.
Take her course, read her books, invest. I'm Bill Nye.
And I'm Corey Powell.
Remember, when it comes to the universe part of our universe, science rules. If you like Science Rules, please take a moment to rate and review it in Apple Podcasts and on Stitcher. It helps us out and helps other people learn about the show. Thanks. Science Rules is produced by Jordan Bell. Our engineers are Casey Hallford, Jared O'Connell, and Brendan Burns. Mixing and original theme music by Casey Hallford. Special thanks to Claire Rawlinson. Chris Bannon is the chief content officer of Stitcher. At Stitcher, science rules.
Stitcher.
I'm standing outside Smithsonian's National Museum of American History. Inside, there are like a trillion objects, and I have to go in there and find 10.
So we open a drawer here, and there's Indiana Jones's jacket and Indiana Jones's whip.
What is this?
Now Prince donated this guitar.
I'm Asif Manvi, and I am lost at the Smithsonian. Where do I begin? This place is obviously full of fascinating stuff.
Fonzie's jacket, worn by Henry Winkler on Happy Days.
There are 156 million objects in the Smithsonian's collections.
Here are Muppets.
these aren't just objects. They're pieces of America's self-identity.
I'm looking at a robe with the name Muhammad Ali.
Only 10 episodes, only 10 objects.
That's pretty amazing.
Lost of the Smithsonian is out now. Subscribe now in Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.